Facing Life's Challenges with Godly Wisdom, Class 5, Contentment. This week's comments include, I'm struggling to find contentment and peace in my stage of life. Several stages of life are mentioned in different comments. I'm seeing others getting married, buying houses, and having children when it's not happening for me. I'm trying to process that and trust God. Marriage is full of ups and downs, stress, kids, work, etc. I need help finding joy in raising kids. It currently just feels like survival mode 24/7. I think the initial question about contentment is a good place to start to answer other questions about circumstantial issues with singleness, marriage, children, and more. I can think of few things more discouraging and exhausting than a life of discontentment, where there is a constant swirl of drama and angst that impacts your heart, attitude, and outlook, where life is lived feeling like something is missing, longing for something beyond what you have. There are moments of happiness, sure, but discouragement, emptiness, and melancholy often follow close behind. There are lots of thoughts, feelings, and emotions involved, but it all leads back to the same place. I'm discontent with the circumstances of my life. I'm sorry for that. I truly am. It makes me sad, empathetic, and maybe a little frustrated. I want to help, and I think I can, but I might have to start with some tough love to do so. I'm sorry about your discontentment, but at the same time, somewhere along the way, you made a choice to continue to live that way. Life doesn't have to be that way. It could be different. You could be content. Do you want to be? As you ponder that question, let me ask another. What is contentment? In the desire for contentment, I think we're often chasing the wrong thing. Maybe we mistake a feeling of momentary satisfaction for contentment. My birthday is coming up next week, and I can imagine the perfect moment. All the family is together. We're sitting around the living room after a great meal and opening presents. I just played a round of golf where I shot 68, and I look at Steph and I say, I'm just so content right now. Maybe, but I think that's the wrong word. I would be satisfied in that moment, but real genuine contentment is supposed to be something that I have all the time, no matter the circumstances. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia defines contentment as to be free from care because of satisfaction of what is already one's own. Contentment is more inward than satisfaction. Contentment is a habit or permanent state of mind, while satisfaction has to do with some particular occurrence or object. What does that mean in English? Well, it means contentment is always supposed to be with us. We all have a roller coaster of good and bad things happening to us at different points in our day, week, month, year, or life. We may be dissatisfied in a moment. I don't like those bad things, but still content. We may be satisfied in a moment. I like these good things, but not content. Contentment is peace, no matter the circumstances. This is what Paul talked about in Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, that now, at last, your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned, in whatever state I am, to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Paul says, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. No matter what, I am free from care because I'm content with what I already have. Paul recognized that contentment is a learned quality. Being content is not something that occurs naturally, but it is something that we must and can develop as we strive to serve God. It is a choice we must all make. So back to that first fundamental question. Do you want to be content? That's almost insulting, isn't it? Why would I even ask that question? I ask it to echo Jesus. John chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first, after stirring the water, was made well of whatever disease he had. Now maybe your translation doesn't have verse 4 there, but certainly this is the idea of what was happening at that time, a textual variant perhaps added by a scribe in order to explain why people were doing this. But the text resumes with what we know is in the Bible in verse 5. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been in that condition a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" Do you want to be healed? That seems a silly question, but it is one that Jesus asks himself. Why? Because it contrasts what Jesus is about to do with the misplaced faith this man had in superstition and human wisdom. Jesus has the power to heal all sorts of ailments, to solve all sorts of problems, including this man's infirmity and your discontentment. In asking, "Do you want to be healed?" Jesus is also saying, "You're not going to be healed doing what you've been doing." The worldly solutions to discontentment are always just out of reach, over-promising and under-delivering. If I just had this, whatever it is, I could be content. If my circumstances changed just a little, then I could be content. But that's not really true. The reality is, even if our circumstances were perfect, if we were, quote-unquote, satisfied by every desire in every way, we could still be discontent. In 2023, I read the book The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, along with many other books on the spiritual disciplines, prayer, fasting, Bible reading and meditation, quiet times and places, and things like that. And I did this considering them as a path to peace and contentment for the Christian. And in that book, the author says this: Thomas Aquinas once asked the question, what would it take to feel satisfied? The answer he came up with was this: everything. We would have to experience everything and everybody to be experienced by everything and everybody to feel satisfied. The writer listed some examples: eat at every restaurant, travel to every country, every city, every exotic locale, experience every natural wonder, make love to every partner we could possibly desire, win every award, climb to the top over every field, own every item in the world, etc. We would have to experience it all to ever feel satisfied. I thought about that, and I came to the conclusion that those two guys are both wrong. Without God, we wouldn't feel fully satisfied even then, even with everything. How do I know? Because everything sounds a lot like Solomon in Ecclesiastes, who says in chapter 1 and verse 2, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." All is vanity. How does he know? Because he had experienced all of it, as he summarizes in chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. "So I became great, and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked at all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There is no profit under the sun." Circumstances, Solomon says, don't really satisfy, and he was in the place to know. Even to the most extreme degree of everything under the sun, they cannot and do not satisfy. So, how do we achieve this state of contentment? I hope we've demonstrated biblically that it's not found in circumstances. Instead, we must learn to divorce our attitude from our circumstances. Paul causes us to perk up when he says in Philippians 4 and verse 11, "I have learned." really like the way the ESV and NET translate this. I have learned the secret, ESV. I have learned the secret of contentment, NET. That almost sounds, it's silly, like clickbait, right? Learn the secret to contentment. Click here. The Bible rarely does this. There are very few quick fixes. So what is it? What is the secret he learned where he can say, this, I have learned the secret of contentment? Verse 13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Paul was independent of circumstances because he was dependent on Christ. We must learn to divorce our attitude from our circumstances and marry our attitude to Christ. Memorize a verse for me. I promise it's not hard. One of the easiest and shortest in the Bible, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Rejoice, that's the proper attitude. In the Lord, that's the source of the attitude. Always, that's the time frame. And then he emphasizes how vitally important this is by repeating it. Again, I will say rejoice. If you know me at all, you know I try to be very honest and very open in my teaching and preaching about my own shortcomings. But I want to be honest with a strength that I have. I've been content almost all of my adult life. There have been peaks and valleys of circumstances, sure, but always contentment. In my first year of college, when my girlfriend broke up with me, I was devastated but content. When I was going to grad school, preaching and teaching in public school, all at the same time, I was so busy, but content. When I had to leave a place I loved and a congregation I loved, and not on the terms I expected or wanted, I was disappointed and unsure, but content. When Maddie, my oldest, didn't sleep, and I felt like a total failure as a parent and totally disconnected as a husband, I was exhausted and exasperated, but content. And right now, in my life, right now, there are problems and frustrations and uncertainties to go with abundant blessings beyond my wildest dreams, but I'm still content. Why? I'm a Christian. Not just in name, but in everything. And early on, I learned that this is where contentment is found. Philippians is my favorite Pauline epistle, even more than Ephesians or 2 Corinthians, other favorites. The first lesson I preached that was, from my perspective, anything close to being good, was a lesson primarily on joy and contentment from Philippians called The Proper Christian Perspective. I preached it way back in 2008 when I knew a lot less about being a Christian than I do now. I went back and looked it up recently, and there were two sentences that stood out. Christianity, I said, isn't a part of who we are. It is who we are. Christianity can't be a part of our life. It has to be our life. I didn't know much, admittedly, but I knew and know that. That's the secret. Christ is a part of everything I am and hope to be. Solomon finally came to that conclusion, Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. The end of the matter, all has been heard, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Paul put it this way earlier in Philippians chapter 1, verses 21 through 23. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. For if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor, yet what I shall choose I cannot tell. For I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. To live is Christ, and to die is gain. Because you get to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. It's Christ, either way. Turn your life over to Christ, and do what Christ tells you to do through his inspired word, and contentment will follow. That's what the lame man did. Going back to John chapter 5, pick up the reading in verse 8. Jesus said to him, "Rise, take up your bed and walk." And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, "It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed." He answered them, "He who made me well said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" I don't care what you say, the lame man says, Jesus told me to do this. He's the one who healed me, so I will do what he says. If you want Jesus to solve your discontentment, and he can, follow him. Submit to his will. That's the road to contentment. Paul says in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6 that godliness with contentment is great gain, and that gain can be yours and mine and anyone's who chooses to follow Christ. So here are some questions to think about before class this Sunday. Number one, when is a time in your life that you felt discontent? What were your circumstances? Looking back, what is your perspective on those things now? Number two, how does comparison with others rob us of contentment? What can we do to fight against that comparison game? Number three, what are some passages you would recommend to help in learning contentment? Number four, was the Lord content on earth? How might we imitate him in living a contented life? Number five, what spiritual disciplines have been helpful to you in emphasizing peace and contentment? May God bless us as we face life's challenges with godly wisdom.